Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
And I'm Scott, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
Today, this episode looks way different than any other episode we've ever done, and I'm going to try and look at the actual camera and not these two faces on the screen, but it's going to be really difficult to do that.
Yeah.
So, today we have Sophia.
Hello.
She's our Canadian international consultant. No, just kidding. She's from Canada, and she's another queer witch, magical practitioner, and we're going to chat with her today about all kinds of things. But mostly, what we're going to be talking about today is the times when magic scared the crap out of us, or the times it became too real or very real. So sort of like those shocking moments in magical practice. But before we get into that, we're just going to introduce Sophia a little bit and talk to her and get her background on everything and where she comes from. So, Sophia, you have the floor.
Hello, welcome. I'm a little bit nervous because I also listen to this podcast, but I'll do a short introduction on myself. I've been studying magic for most of my life, since like my teenage years. It was kind of like similar to one of those, my parents were Catholic, queer rebellion. Fuck you, mom, I'm gonna study witchcraft and become a lesbian, I think was the quote that y'all used. And
yeah.
That completely applies to me. Got into started studying it early adult life, got into chaos magic and like more modern occultism because, had a lot of trouble getting into traditional witchcraft groups and found people more willing to talk shop about like how magic works in more modern spaces. And most of my practice has been solitary. I haven't done any coven work, which I very much are looking to get into. Recently we took up the craft after like a two year period of like figuring my stuff out and coming out as a trans woman and like my entire life falling apart and putting myself back together. So yeah, I'm here just doing my stuff, and it's a pleasure to be here.
So kind of like one of my first questions, and I don't know if you have any other questions, Scott, but like basically, so my first question for you is like, what was your first inclination that you were different in terms of, I'm going from the queer angle right now. So when did you become a gay or a queer? What was your gay birthing moment? Or whatever you want to call it. So what was that moment for you?
I'm trying to remember the phrase that my human sexuality professor called it. I think it was like your sexual debut. Although I mean,
debut.
About like sex in particular, but I still like that about like sexuality as well. But anyway, I'm sorry.
I just like asking people when they became a gay, because people are like, "What? When did you become a gay?"
It's right around the time that the gay fairy snuck up to me and cracked me over the head with a club and said, "You're gay now," and blew off.
Yeah, so when was that for you? Like, what was sort of like your queer origin story?
My queer origin story, let's see. Hated Catholicism, felt like I was a girl all the time. Came out in early 20s. No, not early, mid-20s. It was 25. And I don't know, I spent a lot of time, like, being repressed and, like, living in a conservative small town. Moved to a big city to get away from it and actually come out. Like, I've worked carpentry for 8 years and like, I don't know, it's been a long journey, and I could probably talk a whole hour plus about it. So I'll keep that one succinct. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've always been kind of like different and queer, and I always kind of identify with the outsider is something I've been called a lot in magic spaces. And like, I've also been socially an outsider a lot. So that's kind of an archetype I identify with. Even with my queer identity, I'm kind of an outsider within the community. And I have trouble finding social spaces, but it is what it is.
Okay. Now, what about sort of like your magical origins? What'd you start with? Where was your starting point?
My starting point was trying to do telekinesis in my school field on a stick with other kids after a friend told me about it. And we were all sitting around trying to move this damn stick with our minds, and none of us could get it right.
Scott has this, like, knowing smile on his face, like, like you were there.
And then I later on found out I was the only kid who didn't think it was make-believe. I was the only one who was actually trying to move the damn stick with my mind. And from there, got into psionics was the first thing I studied. My mom caught me, though, and she was, you know, Roman Catholic, so she lost her shit and threatened to send me to, like, psychiatrists and stuff. So I had to, like, quit for a while, and then I picked it back up in my teen years. Yeah. Started again with tarot and then moved into modern mainstream, not mainstream, kind of like counter mainstream occultism. I'm trying not to drop names of any groups that I've worked with.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So where are you at now? Like in your, so where are you at now in your comfort as a queer person, and where are you at now in your comfort level as a witch, and what you're doing with your practice? Like, where's your life at right now?
That's a great question. My life right now is in the middle of my Saturn return, for anybody who's an astrology buff. I just turned 29, and there's like a whole bunch of planets that went from retrograde to direct on my birthday, so I had a big shift from there, and it's like, get back into witchcraft, stop running from your shit, sort it out, and actually, like, approach my craft properly. Because they do this thing where sometimes it gets too real, and I run away for a little bit, because it's scary shit, and then I realize I have nothing to run from, and I just come back to it. And every time I do that, I feel like I've learned something. And right now, I'm getting more practical with my craft. I kind of skipped a lot of foundational practices with, you know, meditating daily or doing specific types of energy working. And I went straight to, like, breaking down the theory of why magic works the way it does and what are the mechanics or, like, what's the mechanism that makes it work, you know, and like very meta magic discussion or hermetic philosophies. And now I'm getting into like traditional witchcraft because I like the fact that it's like centered in living in physical reality, which is something that jived really strongly with me. A lot of hermetic practices, the people almost talk about escaping reality into the astral like it's some great desired goal. And I like the idea of, like, living firmly planted in physical reality and, like, being here to experience it and work the craft while doing it. And I am kind of, like, moving less from the modern stuff and more into the traditional and old ways. And it's been giving some pretty good results, and I'm just kind of working as it goes. And I started working with Akate a little bit, and that's been interesting, to say the least. So, yeah.
Yeah, she is. She's always an interesting deity to work with. That's for sure. Actually, that is for damn sure. That is for damn sure. Which actually, for me, actually kind of leads us directly into the topic that we're talking about today, because you mentioned Hecate. And for me, that was one of my first experiences that really spooked me. And it was actually at a really sort of like, it was a very benign sort of thing. It was like an open pagan group in the local area, and it was for Samhain. And I figured, well, if I'm going to go to any public ritual for my first one, I'm going to go to a Samhain ritual. Hell yeah, let's do that. So I went, and the ritual coordinator was channeling or aspecting Hecate. And she gets into the center of the circle, and the room is dark, and there's candles, there's this big cauldron, and you know, just, it was very, like, the mood was very much there, and there was definitely a vibe in the air, and the ritual started, and she comes out as Hecate, and you could tell she wasn't there anymore. You know, like, she was definitely channeling that deity, and she, in this booming voice that I did not expect to come from this small woman, she was just, "Who calls me?" And I was like, what? what do you mean? And like, everyone got really, like, quiet and, like, withdrawn. And she just walks around the circle and just commands her presence. And she said, "Who calls me?" And everyone just started to chime in, like, "I call you, I call you." And I was like, "Man, what have I done?" Like, what did I do? So that was kind of my first, that was my first experience of, and that was after I was practicing craft for a while. So then I went to my first public ritual and I was like, "Whoa, this is a different, a totally different, vibe from just practicing alone." So that was my first one. I don't know what you guys have as kind of sort of like your first moment where you knew.
I don't remember my first. I remember a few situations that gave me a fright. One in particular, I remember. This is when I was a bit more of a witchling. I was a freshman in high school.
Such a wee lamb.
Yeah, and I was doing a path working, and the thing is that being young and a path working is generally sort of like a very intense, very focused guided meditation to generally either speak with a spirit or something on the other side, etc. However, I realized I didn't really have a focus. I didn't really necessarily know where I was going. I just was going somewhere. Well, in this path working, I come to, interestingly enough, which would apply to my where I'm at now in my craft, I come to the point of a forest. Between where the trees are and a field behind me. And in those that would be considered the hedge. So hedge crossing between the worlds, walking between the worlds, right? The thing is that I never made it past that. What ended up happening was I came out of the meditation almost forcibly so, kind of like my eyes snapped open. I was like, okay, you know. Yeah. And I just figured it was one of my familiars or a deity that I worked with was kind of like, well, you're not, you know, something, you know, so either I wasn't safe or whatever happened. Well, I come into my body and everything was fine a couple days later, for a couple days, was everything was fine. And all of a sudden, I started having these very intense sex dreams. But the thing is, this time, I did know I was gay. I just wasn't out yet. I wasn't, like, wrestling with it. I had a very supportive school. One of the teachers in my school, he was the dance teacher. He was a very, very feminine, queer man, and very proud of himself, and he was beautiful and amazing. And the thing is that it was a woman. It was a woman figure that was assaulting me in these dreams. Well, at first it didn't feel like assault. It felt romantic, but I knew that that didn't make sense. So you can imagine on an emotional level for a young queer person trying to come out, and I'm like, I don't like women. Like, that doesn't, you know.
Yeah, so it's like why am I having this particular dream?
Right. Yeah. So that did affect me in a really weird, like, I was already questioning enough, you know, than to have this, this entity, which at first I didn't recognize as an entity, mind you. It started becoming clear to me that something was wrong when suddenly it became violent. It felt like assault. It felt like I was getting pummeled, and I would see this long-haired, feminine-looking entity. I couldn't see a face. It was always, like, red, but, like, shadow. So, like, I could just see the hair hanging over my face, and it felt like she was beating me and pummeling me, and I would toss, and I would turn in my sleep, and I there was a couple times where I woke up with, like, marks on my arm. Not necessarily hand marks, but, like scratches. And at this time, I was frequenting a popular occult and hoodoo supply store here in Philadelphia. It was called Harry's Occult Shop. Back in its heyday, it was pretty popular. And one of my friends, kind of a mentor, we'll call him a teacher. We didn't have formal whatever. But I went there, and let me backtrack, because something else is happening other than the dreams. In just before I had went there, before I realized something was wrong and went there to seek help, I would pass by strollers, women with strollers. And this happened about four times throughout my day. So from going to high school and coming home for a couple of days in between these dreams, the strollers would start rolling towards me. Like, the woman would be doing something, she would turn away, and the strollers would start rolling.
And it was just flat ground. It wasn't even like a hill or anything like that.
It was just like South Philly. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
Flat.
And it would just, they all just started, and I had to catch, I caught them every time, and I would catch them. But the thing is, like, I know it sounds weird, but like, when you, and I think you both would agree, when you're a witch, you start to realize patterns.
Yes, 100%.
Right? So when things like that start happening, like once, twice, okay, that's just weird. And then when it happens like four times, you're like, okay, something's weird, really weird, you know. You know, you start coming into omens and portents, you know, at that point. I walk in the door of Harry's sometime later, only like a couple weeks later, and this man, his name was Otto. I still remember his name. He was amazing. And he looks at me, he finishes up with a customer, he goes, you look like you're seeking salvation. He read me like that. He looked at me and went, boop. He knew exactly what I was going through. He just was trying to get me to open up. Because I really wasn't going there. I wasn't ready to say it yet, right? I wasn't ready to...
You weren't going there for that, specifically.
Right, I just wanted to feel protected. Because this place at the time was so protected. And he caught on to it. And he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, no. He's like, tell me what happened. And I was like, I did this path working, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, he's like, did you protect yourself? Did you protect your space? Did you do anything? And I hadn't. I was starting to get curious because I was reading about traditions in which you don't cast a circle, right? But the thing is that I wonder if maybe certain rituals are good for you. That's why we grow, right? That's why we grow through traditions, because at the time you're meant to be there, because you're not where you can just, like, now I don't always cast a circle for everything. I cleanse my space. I call my familiars in. I'm like, yo, guys, keep out shit that I don't want in. And then that's what happens. But, you know, then I wasn't ready for that. I didn't have nearly that confidence needed, you know. And he made a joke with me. He's like, oh, we're revoking your witch card. You know, he was just like, he made it very funny. He didn't make
it. Handing the license. Let's go.
Yeah, just, you know, he laughed about it. He gave me a friendly kind of make sure you're casting your circle, blah, blah, blah. And he went and he's like, you wait here. He goes in the back and he gets this wonderful spray. One of the gentlemen that worked there was a Santero. He was a Centuria practitioner, his whole family. And he made this wonderful cleansing and protection spray. I wish they still made it. It was absolutely beautiful. It smelled wonderful. And they put it in spray bottles. And I lie to you not. Like, when this stuff would fall over you, you just felt like you felt it just encompass your whole being. It was beautiful. And he said, spin three times and I'll spray you. Counterclockwise or counterclockwise. I don't remember. Anyway, I did it. It was gone.
Wow.
He banished it. That it was boom for him, 2 seconds, over with. But I think, you know, being young and it having been a this kind of spiritual sexual assault, you know, and coming from a feminine entity, it really kind of, excuse my French, but it really fucked with me a lot. So that was probably one of my more scarier experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, especially, what do you, I mean, now, do you know why maybe it went to this realm of sexual assault? Like, do you have any idea as to why
it
manifested in that way?
Well, it's funny because, you know, using my experience of the spirit world, now, I see the spirit world as a mirror of our own.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's us but backwards. There are just as many spirits and kinds of spirits as there are people and personalities. And it's the same thing there. And when I went to the edge of the forest, that symbolic representation of, you know, in the middle, I was already halfway there, right? Because in my traditions, we go in I always go in. I never did the whole go out thing. Never worked for me. But I think it was something that was straggling between, basically between the veil, you know?
Something that was kind of caught there.
To latch onto. And then when I came back, I brought it back out with me.
That makes sense.
Interesting.
That was
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like praying, like waiting for prey to come.
Right.
Like very predatorial. Yeah. And that would definitely make sense. So what about you, Sophia? What sort of experience?
I've had a several, but I'm going to lead into one specifically because it ties into what Scott was just talking about with crossing the astral without protection. When I was a kid, this was like early practice, just after I was finding out about psionics. One of my friends that I was talking to for it mentioned astral projection. And me being young, I somehow managed to do it the first night that I attempted it. I didn't have a method. I just laid down thinking about it. And sure enough, the experience where I lifted out of my body, and me being a young Catholic child, I asked to see heaven, and I saw my exact image of what heaven was, which was just the image my mind had. And that kind of broke my ties with the Catholic faith a little bit. And I asked to see hell, and I just saw people outside treating each other very poorly, and I realized that, like, hell is a way that we live our lives on Earth. And that was very powerful when I was a kid. But shortly after that, stuff started happening. I would, like, kind of see these shadow entities sometimes in a little bit of my peripheral. And when I fell asleep, a lot of the time I would start experiencing sleep paralysis. And I'd have these things, like, come up to me and, like, hold me down. And I know that sleep paralysis can be a very common experience for a lot of practitioners when they're young. And I think what Scott says made perfect sense, because I didn't experience them until after my first astral projection. And if I didn't know a thing about protection or any of that, so of course I would have brought something back with me or got the attention of something that would have latched on to me. And I learned a very crude method of banishing after that, when my mom threatened me after she found out about everything going on. And it's that I disbelieved magic itself. That only held for so long, but that was the best banishing I could put up. And that never came back since, but it definitely kind of messed with me a bit as a kid. And there was also, like, haunting activity in the house, like poltergeists that would, like, throw stuff when I was alone, that kind of thing, you know?
Scott's house is hella haunted. There's hella activity in his place of residence.
Especially. Oh, my God.
Lately?
Especially.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the time of the year, anyway. It's a day.
Of course. It's funny. In his house, actually, is the portal, as you call it.
The area of my house, before it was settled the way it is, was all marsh. I follow traditional British cunning folk magic and folk tradition. So, in British folklore, marshes were liminal areas where the realm of the fae and spirit could cross between. And I think because this area got, you know, bulldozed and filled in and whatever, I think that energy doesn't die. It doesn't just disappear, you know? What ends up happening is you create a lot of pissed off spirits that are, like, can never die. So these things just stay here. And those areas, those sensitive areas. Not to mention, I live maybe 2 blocks away from Passyunk Avenue. If you couldn't tell by the name, it's Native. It's a Native walkway. It's a traveling way for Native Americans. And I'm not saying that they did anything ritualistic there, because it's all as it was. We historically know that it's just a traveling area where they would trade and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Philly has a lot of Native American named places, because it was very huge.
There's two of them that I live near. I live Passyunk and something else. But the thing is that it's, like I said, it's not that they did anything ritualistic. It's, I realize, history, for some reason. And it doesn't have to be magical history. But if you ever go to the historic parts, like, have you ever been to the historic parts of Canada?
Yes.
See what I'm saying?
Although, different, different parts. Like, one magic part is the coastal rainforest, like the coastal pines where all the mushrooms go. Mm-hmm. Unreal. The spirits are still thriving there. They never died, you know?
And that's what I'm saying. I think because in those areas, history is still alive, and for people like us who are sensitive, who can reach into the past while in our present and still feel it and experience it, it creates a doorway. That liminality creates a doorway, right? So it's interesting. It's already liminal, but the liminality creates a doorway. So it's a door. It's kind of a doorway inception, really. Yeah. It's just making it easier, even easier, which is why so many times spirits that you wouldn't even expect, like even if they're not historically part of your area, are in the historical part of your town. That's just because the spirits are attracted to that, because that's their way in and out, right? There's something there that they can get in and out of, right? And so without repeating myself.
That could almost be a whole podcast in and of itself, a whole episode, historical.
Natural liminal spaces, yeah, too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would like to dig it. Yeah, that's a whole nerd out hour.
A big one is where rivers fork together, because there was one of those in my hometown, and holy crap, if you go there at 3 a.m., there's things that'll just come right out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, like, to go back into fear, and to maybe talk a little bit about liminality. Back in high school, when I started really, I was very out and loud and proud young witch in high school. In my sophomore year, I got this.
I had more pentagram necklaces than I knew what to do with in high school.
I
don't know how I kept my head up. I was so bedazzled.
I only wore one.
Oh my god.
When people realize, because I started doing seances in class and stuff, like reading tarot cards at the end of class. Please.
I love it.
Yeah, it was something. But anyway.
All right, Sabrina. Damn.
I had, well, it's funny, believe it or not, I got other people to open up about their clairvoyant experiences. We were very good friends. He was, Baptist, but he was a medium. He came right out and read the same spirit I did. Me and him saw the same exact thing. We were writing it down. So people wanted to test us to see if we were telling the truth. Which, I mean, I hate when they do that, but I respect it. And we had the same exact thing, verbatim. We talked about a woman with dark hair. We knew exactly what she was wearing, the colors, without talking to each other. They sat us across the room. But anyway, what I'm trying to get to, I had a lot of friends who were into urban exploring. And I always wanted to go, but the problem is that I always had a sense, a sort of a sixth sense, that if I went, I was going to trigger stuff. They used to go to places Jay, you'll know this, called Byberry. Yeah. Byberry was a mental hospital. Unfortunately, they were closed down due to severe maltreatment of their patients, as were most mental hospitals at the time. But the problem was that I was a young witch and a young clairvoyant. I just wasn't ready for that. When they were by themselves, I know this sounds funny, but their ignorance protected them. They couldn't see it, so they were safe. If I was there, I couldn't keep them safe from what I would trigger. You know what I'm saying? From what would stir up because of me. And I wasn't strong enough to keep them safe. I wasn't strong enough to keep myself safe. So I really never went. But to go on that kind of fear, you know, talk about magic and clairvoyance and psionics and fear. So that's I guess, another experience, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And one note I'd like to add to that disbelief is one of the biggest forms of banishing and protection I've ever found for, like, general non-practitioners. I don't want to use a condescending term like muggle or anything, even though I know that's very popular in a lot of magic circles.
I kind of like it.
I think it's better than normie. I think it's absolutely better than normie. Okay, so muggle. A lot of muggles protect themselves by, like, completely disbelieving something, and that's actually, like, a magical technique, because there's that old quote, I mean, yeah, and there's that old quote, there's no such thing as truth so much as there are convenient lies, you know? And I think that underlies a lot of magical practice that kind of delves into why people can switch systems and have it still work for them. And you kind of question where the source of it comes from, but it all kind of ties together, you know? And on another note, it's interesting how many people have paranormal experiences that they'd love to have someone talk to about it, but a lot of people don't make them feel comfortable enough, or they feel like they'd be ridiculed, so they don't open up about it. And it's interesting, like what Scott was saying, how people would actually like talk to them about that, like the Baptist medium. And that's something I've encountered too, is that there's a lot of people who have stuff happen, but they just don't talk about it because they feel like they'd be ostracized.
You know, a lot of that I find in particular in the pagan and occult communities right now, and I wonder if it's because, you see, a lot in, there's this trend in the magical community where we're starting to get out of the idea that magic is magic. We're getting out of this idea that you can physically affect the world around you through will and intention. The problem is that that's no longer magic. Right? We're coming into a realm of self-help. Now, I'm a psych major. I have no problem with self-help if you're the kind of person that it works for. But the thing is that magic is not just self-help. Magic is also, once again, using will and intention to kind of rewrite the weird, to literally rewrite the world around you in a way that would... Okay. To rewrite the world around you and to manifest your will and intentions, right? And your desires. Let's also say that, too. We're afraid to admit that magic is magical a lot in this community lately, it seems. Not everyone, but...
Which might come back into this idea of fear, because I think a lot of people aren't open. See, it's like you said. So people trying to use magic as self-help. So... you know, thereby saying that magic is only good. It's only good for you. You can't possibly do anything else with it. You know, by that logic, that's sort of what they're aiming for, and that's not necessarily accurate. It's not accurate. I'm not saying not necessarily. It is not accurate. So yeah, there is almost this, and it's interesting to me that people view magic as self-help, because I think those are the people that realize what magic can actually be used for. So what I'm saying is those people that are really promoting magic as a self-help, I feel like there's two camps of those people. They're actually really powerful sorcerers that want to spread misinformation about magic so that way they can continue to do what they want to do with it. You know, all of the other things that magic is useful for. Or they're just completely ignorant. They have no understanding of what magic actually is. Because I think you really have to understand that magic is a force. So you could do something with the best of intentions and still be scared shitless. And still, you know, have something attached to you. You could do a healing for someone and in turn take on their pain or take on their problem or whatever it is that you're doing.
Experience.
Yeah. And you know, and this also relates. So, another experience I had is I made this protective charm for my partner, and they actually did get into a car accident. And what scared me the most is, what if I hadn't made that?
Right.
Yeah.
What if I didn't do that? What if in that moment where I was like, nah, I'm not going to do it, if I was just like lazy or, you know what I mean? Like, what if I didn't do that in that moment? And that is a terrifying thought too, is our inaction as magical practitioners, because we are, you know, because I was a little skeptical because it was early on and I was like, well, I don't know, like, are they going to find this odd or strange or weird? You know, I'm handing you a glass vial of cat whiskers with, you know, like, what are you going to think of me for doing that? And, but I'm glad that I pushed through that because I was like, ah, fuck it, I don't care, whatever. I mean, if you're going to be in this with me, you're going to be in this with me for all my weird bullshit. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's fine. So, but yeah, it really freaked me out about what our inaction can cause as much as our magical actions. And using magic as self-help is almost like you're not doing actions. It's magical inaction. And that is terrifying to teach people.
Yeah, there's a few things I have to say about that. One, I can see how magic can be used very much to help yourself.
Absolutely.
Because I've used magic to, like, get control over situations that I felt helpless over, and you can absolutely use it as self-help. But holy shit, have I messed up a lot of stuff too? And have I ever caused mistakes? And I think I almost have more mistakes at this point than I have perfect successes. And that's kind of the way it goes. Like, you do something and you don't understand the breadth of the consequence of what you're asking, and then you get it in a completely different way, and you feel upset about it, but it's like you have that responsibility. But, like, at the same time, what you were saying, too, is, like, weight of inaction is something that I kind of struggle with a little bit, because there's a lot I could have really done magic against that I do regret not having done. Like, little things, like storms that hurt people, you know? And big things, like not casting against Trump, because that was the period of time where I was like, fuck it, I'm going to give magic up, you know? And I feel like, at least for myself, as a queer witch, that I have a responsibility to, like, do something with my craft that I won't regret doing in the future, you know? And, like, it can be hard when you actually think about the fact that your magic actually does cause change. You can throw stuff up, and you will, and you have, and what's worse, the fact that you're going to mess something up and you're going to have to learn from it, or the fact that you could have changed something you didn't? And that's, I think, a very thought-provoking and also scary question.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's also like a loaded question, that there's so much that we could, all these topics really could be unloaded and unpacked for hours, really.
Very true.
But what was I going to say? You know, there's a comedian. I actually really love his comedy. He's funny. He did like an Azkaban from Harry Potter comedy skit.
Okay.
And he told like this dude, like, because he has tattoos on his face, right? But he's a huge dork. And everybody always thinks he did time. And, you know, one time he's talking about being at Walmart, and this guy asked him, where'd you do time? And he said, oh, I did 7 years in Azkaban.
I want to start telling people that shit.
But anyway, I found out that he had a podcast, and him and his girlfriend practiced magic. So, of course, I became really interested, right? You always get interested when you find new practitioners.
Always.
You always kind of want to become their friend, right?
It's like when you find another gay person or, like, another trans person, you're like, hey.
Right, Jay? Right?
Exactly. Yeah, when we started talking, I was like, hey.
I was like, oh, you're a gay trans witch? Me too.
Gee.
But he started making jokes at people who believed that magic, you know, like, that. Put it this way, he thought the idea of putting cat whiskers in a jar was laughable. His magical practice was all about, which I like, I don't get me wrong, magic is totally about self-mastery, and you know, it's about becoming the best you that you're meant to be at the time, right? And, or that you can be at the time. But the thing is to make fun of, to kind of ridicule thousands of years of esoteric, metaphysical, and occult wisdom that we have garnered from around the world. I mean, not to be appropriative, but realistically, magic, I mean, magic as a whole, the practice of magic is almost, in and of itself, is appropriative, because there are principles that you find from different traditions, from different parts of the world, wisdom, like kind of like the wisdom, not like the mechanics of, but the wisdom of, and how we kind of translated that.
Yeah.
Well, I always felt like it was always like pulling puzzle pieces from different Because magic itself is so expansive, I don't think there will ever be one tradition, one system, one whatever to fully master it. Yeah, exactly. So we definitely do, we do appropriate, we do pull from other cultures, but we pull what makes sense in our own craft, which I think is fine. Yeah.
And I think that that happens in different ways, too. Like, I don't think it's always necessarily like, you know, an abuse of appropriation or even necessarily an obvious one. But not to get off track, because we are talking about fear today, but, you know, he was just one of those people that reminded me of kind of that little, what we were talking about, magic as, you know, magic and not just a psycho-spiritual experience.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I could lead that into somewhere, too.
Sure.
Talking about psycho-spiritual and fear. To talk about another magical encounter I had. Back in my youth, I had...
My youth. Any older people that watch this are going to be like, really?
My youth of witchcraft. I'm still friends with one of these people, my friend Kim. She's one of my best friends. And this other person, he's kind of not in my life at this point, but he was a good friend, and he used to get me into a lot of trouble when it came to occultism. I don't want to bring up his name just in case, but
just in case he gets you in trouble again.
You, Jay, you know who this person is about that story.
Yes.
Yeah. One of these days, I'll tell you, Sophie. I'll tell you about it, but.
Okay. not a public story. It's not for the public.
Yeah.
But he was very much into the left hand.
Yeah.
And he got very involved in the left hand path, which I generally don't mind at all. I mean, I kind of crooked path magic is kind of part of what I do, but he was just very, very brazen. He went places that I wasn't ready for. He went places that I don't know if I would have ever went, but I did because of him. And in some ways, I'm thankful, right? I'm thankful that he kind of tested my limits, right? But the thing is that it was brutal. It was very brutal with him. One experience, we started teaching my friend Kimberly about magic. She started becoming very interested in the practice of magic, especially after she found out her aunt in New Orleans is part of a voodoo house, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So she began becoming interested in magic. And she was I remember she had this mirror, and she was really into scrying and creating sort of evocations and even demonolatry and things like that.
Ooh.
And she created a portal through the mirror to which she can use it for evocation. And she, after one ritual, she fell asleep. The ritual just exhausted her so much, she conked out. She never closed the mirror ritualistically.
Oh, no.
So that Saturday, she did that I think she said it was like, this was years ago, but I remember I was like, how long has it been like this? And I think she said either Thursday or that the night before Friday. And we were going over to sleep over on that Saturday. So I walk in the room first and I'm like,
oh no.
Sorry, Mom. So anyway, I walk in the room and the whole room feels like it tilts. And I'm like, ooh.
Oh.
And I, like, drawn to it, I look right at the mirror, and I was like, I could step through this thing. Like, I make a joke. I was like,
yeah.
I could just, like, walk right through it.
Just jump in.
Yeah. I made a joke. Did you ever see the movie Prince of Darkness, where the girl's like, father, and she puts her fingers through the mirror?
Oh, I never saw that.
No, it's old art.
That's how you felt, though?
It's really cheesy. But
reminds me of the Matrix when he touches the mirror and it just like,
oh yeah, and it sticks to his fingers.
Yeah.
Well,
same idea.
We end up, David walks in, and now David was behind me talking to her mom downstairs. He walks in. He goes, what the hell? He didn't hear a word I said. So he reacts to the same thing. Kimberly's like, what? What is with both of you? And we're like,
she didn't notice this portal to the
she was
whatever.
She really, you know, that ignorance protecting you. She was still new, so I mean, she wasn't sure exactly what was going on. And she, I think, in some way, see, my friend Kimberly, even to this day, she's very big on the to be silent part of the hermetic. You know, yeah. to know to dare to be silent.
Oh, I get it.
She's very big on the to be silent part. I probably should be more so, but she's like,
same.
I don't tell nobody nothing. which I respect. But anyway, we ended up doing a ritual to close the mirror because I was like, I can't sleep in this room with that open. Like,
yeah,
I
there's no way. There's no way we're getting to sleep.
David goes and gets a bowl of spring water. And he puts it down, and we start, you know, we all sit, you know, in sort of like a triangular formation. And we begin to I just begin to kind of lend energy to Kimberly, right? Because I'm not really, we're teaching her.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, as Kimberly's beginning to trance out and getting into ritual mindset, you watch. Now, it's funny, because David said he saw gray smoke. But David is a sensitive. He feels it and can sort of see it. I'm a medium, so for me, I saw more than smoke. It was like gray. It was like some kind of tranquil spirit coming through the mirror. And I saw these very weird kind of crooked hands, and it was very peculiar. And It wasn't like a demonic spirit of any kind. It wasn't like that. It was something chaotic, something uncontrollable, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It started, I could see it coming up like this, right? Coming through up. And all of a sudden my heart starts beating. And like I'm trying just to give Kimberly energy, like I'm trying to stay focused. But eventually this thing's like the second hand, getting a grip, starting to pull. And I'm like, David. And now,
this
I mean...
This is like a horror story. Like, I'm down there like, what?
But all of this is happening clairvoyantly, right? And David goes like this over the mirror. He goes... And all of a sudden, it all the whole experience, the energy in the room... Now, keeping in mind, as this thing's coming up out of the mirror, the energy in the room, it's getting colder. And your skin, the hair on your... It's all standing up. There's like a kind of like that ozone, kind of like that weird, you know, how ozone, not just the smell, but ozone, like when electricity, there's like a thickness.
Yeah. I know.
That crackling weird, like plasma weird in the air. And I go, and that's when I said David, and David went, and it just disappeared.
You were trying to let her handle it. And close it, so you were just there to assist, but you said to him, like, no, you gotta...
Because I knew at that point it was she wouldn't have had the control to put it back down. You know what I'm saying? I think one of the oldest witches' adages is, don't summon anything you can't put down, right?
Yeah.
And that's just because, I always say to people, my 13-year-old little cousin can summon an entity. Summoning isn't a problem. Some entities want to be summoned. The problem is putting them down, and that's where the training comes in at. That's where you want to call one of us to put things back down.
And if they're persistent, sealing the lock.
right. And that's a whole other set of, right. That moment, I think, I was terrified. I, honest to God, was absolutely... terrified. I'm not, and another thing too, I'm not hearsed on, like, well-hearsed on evocation. I'm not, like, big on, at least not in a classical sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, I've never done it in a very classical way. I've always kind of, I use my familiars to kind of, hey, can you go get this person for me? You know?
Yeah.
And then I'll be in sacred space and I kind of do that way, just because I feel safer doing it that way. Plus, I never could connect to, like, you know, the lofty high magic, although mm-hmm. I hate that term. But
I hate that term, too.
Yeah. I just use it because other people know what that they can get the idea.
Hopefully.
But I think the way I do it, I think it sticks to my more animistic and more shamanic approach to magic.
Yeah.
So without, you know.
I can relate to that because I've been thinking about this recently, and I do invocation more than evocation, whereas, like, evocation's calling it forth and trying to get it to have a physical form. When I invoke it, I, like, bring it into myself and, like, perceive it in the world around me and have that subtle conversation. And it's kind of, like, sounds like what you're describing, and I feel more protected and balanced in that space than, like, disrespectfully calling something out and demanding it show up in front of me and then having to deal with some pissed off whatever in front of me. Mm-hmm. I feel better invoking versus evoking. But I also am not someone who has issues with getting possessed, but I've hung out with people who did, and this leads into a good story of mine. I used to do this these evocations with a certain god forms that I work with, one of which represents like shamanic death and rebirth, and it's a doozy. The sigil itself works in the way to scatter and destroy something and then recombine it afterwards, and it's also kind of like follows the process leading up to initiation in a lot of magical arts. Because the system I worked was a modern creation of the cycle of initiation, and this is a step in that process. But anyways, I was invoking with this giant talisman. I had made the thing. It was like a painted rock with a sigil over it, and it was red. And I was holding it with a friend, and I was pressing this. I'll use god form because it's closer to a god form archetype. I was pressuring it to do something to help my goals with magic and humanity. And when I was pressuring this spirit, saying stuff to it, my friend just like twitched his head all weirdly with his eyes closed and like twisted a little bit and then just like gave me a response of the people that you want, they shall be freed. And I'm like, what do you ask? Opened up his eyes completely sober and looks at me. He's like, what do you mean? What am I saying to you? I didn't say anything. I'm like, no, shut up. You most definitely said something to me. And he was just like legit confused. He's like, I didn't say a word. Are you okay? So like, I freaked out because the spirit spoke to me through him. So the next day I'm like, no, fuck this. I'm getting rid of the stone. This is too real. I've never had anybody possessed directly in front of me. And I make a big mistake with getting rid of the stone. One of the ways to evoke this being, its incense, is marijuana smoke, right? And, oh boy, do I like to smoke me some marijuana, especially back in those days. And I took my friend with me, a different friend, because this guy has never been possessed, and I know he's going to be okay if I have to get rid of this stone. And we drive way out into the middle of nowhere, up a mountain by a quarry at the lake nearby the city I live in. And we walk up to this spot, and on the way, we, like, see a boulder tumble down the mountain, and we're like, what was that? And he's like, I don't know, but it's weird. Spooks me a little bit. So we sat down with the rock next to us that I was going to get rid of, and we started smoking. And I heard this thing moving up behind us, and I asked him what it was, and he said it's probably just a squirrel. But I noticed that in between the gaps of us talking and listening, it would stop when we were listening and only move when we were talking. And I know that's what a mountain lion is. So we get up right quick, and I grab my weapon, which was a short kukri, and he had a hammer, and we started moving. And I didn't see it at that point, and he swore to me that he saw it like dart off afterwards. So we started getting out of there, and I'm like, this spirit is associated with cats, and a mountain lion is a giant cat, and incense is its smoke. What am I doing? And it's like, why am I getting rid of the talisman for this thing? So like, I'm panicking, and there's literally a cougar behind us. And those of you who like live in small rural regions sometimes know that deer will come into cities where it's safer to live by people because they know we're not going to hunt them. And sometimes predators out in the wilds can get a little risky. I've never seen a like wolf try and do anything, but I've definitely seen some cougars do some sketchy shit. And this thing followed us out of the woods for about a kilometer and a half. I've never been more scared in my life. There was a part where like the pathway bended and it tried to get up closer to us because there was a shorter line of sight, and I could like see the grass parting, but I could like just see the top of its back, and like, holy crap. And the only reason nothing happened with us is because neither of us were so scared that we ran away, because we had been taught if you deal with a mountain lion, never run away, it kicks in the predator instincts and they'll chase you down and pounce on you. So if one of us had run, one of us would have died. But because we kept our composure and we got back to the car, we made it out safe and like had the closest death experience with wildlife I've ever had in my life. And I, to this day, don't fuck with that spirit. We have mutual respect, but it was kind of one of these things of, okay, if you're getting rid of my talisman, I'm going to make you pay for it, and let's test you and see how you do.
Ah.
And fuck.
Wow. Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. See, that's just, like, that's super real. I mean, that's not even just, like, oh, I was in a shamanic trance and a cougar tried to kill me. It was like, no, like, a cougar actually tried to kill me in my physical body.
Yeah, that's the thing about magic. When something's, when you actually have something's attention, oh, don't fucking pretend like it's a child's game, because they will make you pay for it sometimes. It's not a game. It's not a self-help only thing. Like, it's real.
I was just going to say, yeah, tell me again how magic is just self-help. Please, enlighten me.
It's really not a game, you know? You approach it reverently. You approach it with respect and wisdom and, you know? I mean, have fun. Like, I think it's funny, because, like, I know this kind of almost sounds redundant, but I think, like, so many of us, too, we forget to have fun at the same time.
Yeah, yes. I mean, there are times where you get too deep into it.
And I think, you know, I don't think that, as I always say, magic is never, the practice of magic, just the being of a magical practitioner is never just one thing, you know. Magic itself, if you were to look at it, you know, as I talked about in the podcast, you know, the witch is almost like an entity, right, that lives inside of us, you
like
know.
An archetype.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you really look at it, she, you know, I always say she's like the old hag that lives on the edge of the woods that's covered in moss and long hair, and she has bones and skulls and she can read them and throw them, but she's a shapeshifter. She's wise and a shape. She could, you know, create and destroy. And I think that as an archetype, that is the nature of the witch, right? We're wise and we're playful. We're free and we're, you know, bound by certain universal laws, you know, or rules. You know, I think it kind of, you know, like, there's free will, but then other times maybe there's not, you know, like.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think, what I'm trying to get at is, witchcraft is a sacred paradox. It is supposed to not always make sense.
Yeah, and I think we often try and make it make sense. So when we have these terrifying experiences or this fear that gets triggered by what we're doing, we try and categorize it and compartmentalize it. And okay, well, maybe it was this specific thing that I did, this specific action. And it's not necessarily always the case. But as you said, it is very much a paradox. But all in that same time, like in those moments where we were the most afraid, it's also when we felt the most magical and the most powerful in some ways.
Because you knew something was listening, right? You knew something was responding back. Yeah.
It's almost it's like being a daredevil. It's like, I understand daredevils, you know what I mean? Like, why would that guy, like, drive a motorcycle through a hoop of fire? That makes no goddamn sense. But then you're like, all right, well, that was kind of cool when, like, that really freaky thing happened to me and I was really scared. So, like, I felt really cool about it. So I would do it again.
I really
in a different way.
I really think there's something to be said that this conversation about fear and magic went into what is magic. And I think that there's something really to mull over and ponder.
Oh my god. That's like my favorite topic right there is what is magic. That's like my bread and butter is getting into the like root mechanic of it and studying it of what makes it work, how it doesn't, what happens when it goes wrong, having like really good discussions about that. I could probably have an 8-hour discussion on that if someone were to supply me with enough probably wine and smoke, and we can sit down and just talk and drink.
That would be great. I would love that. And yeah. I love talking about the philosophy of magic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I'm trying to think if I have any other, like, stories, ones that I'm comfortable with sharing. Mm-hmm. I have, I guess, more ghost stories that would apply more to me. I mean, but I guess it, once again, really depends on if you see, like, a witch as someone who is psychic innately, which I know is an interesting, weird... We kind of briefly discussed that, Jay, I think in one of the latest episodes, about, you know, witchcraft and being psychic and not necessarily the same... When we talked about the mark, we talked
about the witch blood. That was actually the last episode, yeah.
I did, you know, I do real quick, if I could just make an amendment on that just a little bit.
Sure.
While I don't think being a witch means you have to be psychic, but I think that every magical practitioner should work on their psychic mind.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Does that make sense? Okay.
You kind of said that in that episode anyway.
Okay. I forget if
maybe not that exact, but yeah.
I'm a little, one of those nervous people. I don't really ever... saying.
Sometimes we just beat around the bush and really miss the point and until the next episode, and we're like, well, that's what I was trying to say, of course.
Yeah. I think the last story really comes into my mediumship, growing up, seeing the dead, was really about when my mother worked right down the hall from a morgue in a lab. My mom's a phlebotomist, so she works around blood, and she, you know, she's been a phlebotomist for over 35 years. And it's a historic hospital that's no longer a hospital now. It's storage, medical storage. And it was right down the hall. And after school, I would go to do my homework on the computer in an office right across the way from the morgue. And...
a very normal thing for a young witch.
I'm not very afraid of dead bodies at all. Death doesn't scare me, per se. I mean, like, I don't want to die right now, but, like, I'm not scared of death. Does that make
sense?
Right. Yeah.
That makes
sense. Anyway, I was just doing my homework and watching anime. More watching anime than watching homework. Than doing homework. But,
we see through your disguise.
But one day I was sitting there and I just hear a loud bang. I wait.
The morgue?
I didn't know where it was coming from.
I'd be like,
so,
nope.
Bang. Bye. I don't know. I stop. Nothing. So that bang, that kind of bang, stop me, listen, repeat, happened a couple of times. And finally, I get curious. So I go, and I turn to look towards the opposite way of the morgue. So the door is behind me, and I look down the hallway thinking it's like a cart or something. You know, they wheel carts and stuff, the custodial staff and stuff like that, especially the time I was there. It was evening. So the custodians are cleaning up for the next shift. I hear it again from behind me, and I jump, and I turn around. Well, I watch as the morgue door just closes. It was like a heavy wooden swing door. And I start going up to it. I'm like, hello? And the thing is,
like,
at this point,
you're like the thing you shouldn't be in the horror movie. That's you.
You mean the girl that falls? Oh, no.
Yeah, like the juicy, like, preppy chick, like, oh my god, I died.
The thing is that I started getting that feeling that you get, that when there's a spirit there, that charged feeling in the atmosphere. Like, even the human dead have that same energy. And this was a human spirit. It's an inconsiderably powerful human spirit.
Yeah.
And I started the chills and the hair on the stand, you know, the hair standing on end. And as I started walking up to the morgue door, bam, the door swings open and there is a foot, a human foot, not in like a shoe, but like a human foot. And when I say a human foot, I mean it's discolored. It's, you know, the color of a corpse. There's the black and blue that, you know, that corpse flesh gets. And I ran so, for a big boy, I ran so fast back down the
hall. You're like an Olympic sprinter at that point.
Oh. Now, I had turned on my ankle, unfortunately. I ended up spraining my ankle.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, like when your adrenaline's going, you couldn't feel it. Well, now the thing is, as I'm running down this hallway,
oh
and
gosh,
everyone.
Where are the typical chicken horror movies, though? Because, like, you hurt your ankle. I did.
I ended up trying to. Right. The thing is, everybody always talked about feeling followed down this hallway until you got to a certain point. There was a break in the hallway, another hallway going, bisecting it, right?
Yeah.
As soon as I got past that,
It
felt like it stopped, but something was running after me. But it was a spirit. It wasn't like a material, like, but for a moment it materialized. It was a full materialized apparition. Now, that's not the first full body apparition I've ever seen in my life. I've seen one other, but that was not scary. It was eerie, but not scary.
This was terrifying.
That, I was in danger. Like, if I would have stayed, it would have hurt me. If I didn't have the instinct to run from it, I would have got hurt. It had enough power to throw me around. If it really wanted to, it could have hurt me. Or it jumped. It could have whooped right in if it wanted to. But
I want to ask, is it actually human at that point still?
I like to think that willful humans can be willful dead. So, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I wonder, I mean, it was considerably powerful, but, it could easily be, my definition of an intranquil spirit is a human spirit that gets, the way hoodoo, in the southern folk tradition of hoodoo, intranquil spirits are human spirits that have been not crossed over for too long, and I have interesting opinions of what that means, but and they're very different. One day I'll talk about that, but they're kind of infected. As I said, the spirit world to me is just a mirror of our own. Mm-hmm. We can get sick, so can they. And tranquil spirits to me are spirits that are infected with a more deeper sort of thing. Rage, resentment, psychological, emotional harm, emotional infection, right?
Yeah.
The need to correct an injustice but can't. Being stuck in a, like, you know, knowing that you have to move somewhere else or be something else and it's not happening. All of those things create an intranquil spirit. And once you get to an intranquil spirit, that's when we're talking about a human spirit that was once human but is no longer.
Yeah.
And
so
that
you think
is
that's
how
what, yeah, that, that's probably what you were dealing with.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and which makes a lot of sense, right? But I think what I was watching was, because I still felt emotions, like it was angry. Mm-hmm. Whatever this person was angry. And now, of course, most of the time when you sense an intranquil spirit, and I've come up to a few of them, although I'm not always necessarily afraid of them, for mostly because I'm behind my wards when that happens.
Right, you're not like
just
at a morgue.
Yeah. it was almost like I caught him in the process of this dark transition.
Mm.
This kind of strange,
like he's newly coming into it.
Because intranquil spirits are more like animals than they are like thinking entities.
Oh, like the nefesh layer of the soul.
Hmm.
Sorry, sorry to interrupt. There's layers to the soul in traditional Kabbalism, and the nefesh is referred to as the animal spirit, and it's like the residual self of you that would be regarded as this individual here that doesn't follow the spirit with when you die and move on. So it would be like a remainder of that part of the soul that would like have magnified the emotion.
Right.
That makes sense.
I just didn't know the name, but yeah. So it's the kind of, you know, raging animal of the human spirit. I would honestly say that they're probably some of the most dangerous astral. Me and my friends used to joke and call them astral nasties. But they're the most
appropriate
dangerous.
Names.
Some of the most dangerous. Yeah. Just because they're incredibly powerful. And like I said, they don't think. They just feed, and they just attach and harm and cause discord and chaos. I always say, you know, like, chaos is kind of, you know, people always are so over-concerned with good and evil, right? Mm-hmm. I don't over-concern myself with that just because it's part of nature. It's part of the cycle. It's part of the order of nature.
Totally.
And I'm very nature-heavy in my practice. But chaos, on the other hand, chaos is unruly. Although there's order to balance it, but that's probably where I kind of get into a little bit more of a moral thing, right? Is that chaotic energy that just when chaos is just allowed to, you know, let loose, that's when it becomes dangerous, at least in my philosophies.
So I think that's kind of a good place to sort of like wrap up that with that incredibly terrifying depiction of being in a friggin' morgue and having a spirit attack you. We could probably do like 3 million episodes on incredibly terrifying experiences. But for the most part, I kind of just wanted to really introduce, another queer witch into this, and I thought it would be really cool to do this, like, you know, sort of like a time when magic terrified you, because me and Sophia have talked in the past, and Sophia's had a number of experiences that have reflected that exactly.
So it's a perfect time of year too to address
and that too, and I thought it would be like a really cool idea. So if you guys like this kind of format, we would like to do this again, bring Sophia into some of these conversations.
I would love that.
Yes.
We gotta talk a lot more.
Yes. Yeah. I wish that all of us had better internet connections, which would be even better, but you know what, we're broke, so whatever. It is what it is. I just hope you guys like this format, because we would like to continue to do it more. Maybe we'll do this again for episode 12, since this is still within the Halloween, Samhain sort of time period. We could do maybe like ghost stories next time. Supernatural paranormal experiences, which you both are grinning like cackling witches that you are. So I think episode 12 is going to be paranormal experiences and ghost stories, so stay tuned for that. As always, we are on all sorts of social medias. We have the Twitter, we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook. I'm actually going to make a Tumblr. I'm going to do that, so we're going to be in the part of the Witch Blur community. I'm going to start having a presence there. You can listen to us on Spotify and Google Play Music. I've been lazy and also busy, so I haven't looked into iTunes yet, but most of our listeners are on Spotify, so I think that's been working well. And, of course, there's always YouTube. And we have a Reddit. We have a subreddit community, which is run by my partner. There really hasn't been any activity in there. I don't really know if Reddit's going to really take off or not. I don't know. But go there if you really want to – if you're looking for one place – that you can really chat with us and start conversations and topics about all different kinds of things, definitely go there. And I might also look in. We also have Patreon. That's another thing, too.
We do have a Patreon.
We do have a Patreon. We have 3 tiers for the Patreon, so definitely check that out. And we don't do the typical YouTube bullshit of like, comment, and subscribe, because we know you'll do that if you like it. So there you go. So we will see you guys in the next episode. We're going to be talking about ghost stories and all kinds of more spooky stuff. So stay tuned until next time, and we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. Scott here. I've been reading tarot for over 10 years. I am an intuitive reader, and through my readings, I try to give guidance to aid my clients in navigating their lives. To schedule a reading with me, you can find me on Facebook at Witchwise Seer and Witch. You can also find me over on Instagram and Tumblr with the handle Witchwise, spelled WYTCHWYSE. You can find links to all of my social media in the show notes. I hope to hear from you.